Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. How you doing? It's Genuinely Grace for the Alcohol Free Life podcast from the Sober Club, and I hope you've had a good week. I've actually managed to have a few days off. It was lovely, actually, and all that weather, terrible weather that everyone said we were going to have, it wasn't too bad at all. Well, not where I was. It was all right. That's the thing, isn't it? Weather forecasts, what are they like? They get everything wrong. Anyway, I had a really nice week, and just kind of, you know, staycation stuff. nothing too wildly exciting. Talking about being by the sea, our Sober by the Sea days, we've got another new date added. So if you can't make the two dates that we already have, which I think, let me think, what are they now? Saturday, 21st of August. We have one on Saturday, the 4th of September, and we've just put a new date in as well for the 25th of September. So make sure you message me or drop me an email if you're interested in that. If you want to look at all the details, you just go to thesoberclub.com and click on events for those one day retreats, visioning the new you. We had great fun on the last one. It's really about it's about connecting really with like-minded people. They're very small, and you get to really get a sense of what self-care is going to look like for you, you know, as you step into your new identity. And it doesn't matter if you are not sober yet, or even if you've been sober years, makes no difference really, because we focus on, well, as my guest last week said, we focus on creating the life you love without the booze. And on that note, I have to read you this lovely Facebook post from one of my Sober Club members. I hope she won't mind. I won't give her name. But it was just the most joyous post that she put in our private group, with a picture of her car, of some lovely food she'd made, of herself with the most amazing, beautiful smile, of herself on a hike, of herself with friends smiling, and a sunset, and just like a whole series of absolutely gorgeous pictures. And then she wrote, where's the post? She wrote, "This is not bragging. It's just to inspire anyone doubting that this is not possible. It is a celebration of me because I deserved it, right?" Yes, you absolutely did. She said, "I knew that I had to pack the wine in, and I did it with the help of this club without a shadow of a doubt. 2 years sober, alcohol free. But my life is so much better. And the gratitude I have for my life and everything in it is immeasurable. Thank you, Janie, for your fabulous club and brilliant content. Forever grateful." It was just so lovely, the kind of light shone out of that post, because she's just so smiley and so happy. And that's what's just amazing. You see it all the time. There's so much misery around addiction, around being caught in the alcohol trap. So much kind of I don't know. It's not very glamorous, is it? Nothing linked to drinking too much is actually really very nice at all. And yet there's just so much positivity when you get past that and you get on the other side. It just makes so much difference. I just love it when I see posts like that. And of course, not everybody in the club is 2 years sober yet. We've got people on day one, sober curious people. Actually, there's a lovely post after that one from somebody saying, "Oh, I'm so lovely to see this. I've literally just joined the Sober Club. I'm only on day four. And this is massive for me, because hadn't got past day three before. So this was a really inspiring post." So it doesn't matter what stage you're at. This is worth doing. If you ever needed a reminder that this is worth doing, by the way, you probably saw the piece in The Guardian this week talking about the headline was about the fact that alcohol causes is linked to far more cancers than they had previously thought. It's done by the Director of Research and Innovation at the World Cancer Research Fund. Apparently, they funded the research, and they're talking about alcohol and coffee, interestingly enough. Coffee is meant to have a protective effect on the liver. But they're basically saying that alcohol is increasing the risk of cancer, because when it's metabolized, it breaks down into chemicals, they say, that combine to DNA, resulting in mutation that can become cancerous. And alcohol can increase the levels of the hormones linked to the development of some types of breast cancer. And then they're talking about a whole load of other cancers. They're basically saying that now they believe it's linked to at least 11 different cancers, whereas, you know, in the past they were talking about 7, weren't they? So, I mean, that came as no surprise to me. But it's not that often that you see these articles. So I think, you know, they do need to pop out occasionally just to sober us up, you know, just to really, really lay it down that you know, we're dealing with serious stuff here. I mean, how can really, if you're really rational and realistic, how can you possibly think that alcohol wouldn't lead, you know, wouldn't be linked to cancer? And God knows what other illness. I mean, anyone who believes in looking after their health and well-being would be wanting to give themselves the best shot, right? And quitting the poison is one of the best places to start. I mean, I kind of laugh because, you know, I would have looked at an article like that years ago. And just thought, oh, don't be ridiculous. That's only referring to those people who are absolutely at rock bottom, those people who are not able to function in the morning without, you know, a whole bottle of scotch. They're the people that this is talking, that's talking to, not me, not, you know, me, who's kind of managing to go to work and feel fine, seemingly, and nobody knows there's an issue. They're not talking about me. Well, in fact, they actually are. You know, that's exactly who this article is talking to. And you know, don't ever think you have to wait till you get to rock bottom before you, you know, before you quit this and before you step off the booze elevator. I was asked in the week if I wanted to contribute to an article that was going to be in one of the mainstream papers. And fortunately, I kind of asked the right questions before I went much further and tried to find out what the angle was. And it turned out the angle is about people who have gone to rehab, daytime rehab, and then kind of gone back in the evening to their family and the kids, and seemingly everything's okay. But meanwhile, they've been at rehab during the day, you know, completely at rock bottom and needing rehab. And you know, my story wasn't salacious enough. There was no rock bottom. But you know something, I think that's the case for so many people. That's why this work is so important, I believe. This, you know, the people I really want to reach are those people who, you know, everyone else thinks they're fine. Everyone else does. Seemingly it's okay. You know, go on, just have one. But, you know, if you're anything like me, you're waking up at 3 a.m. absolutely hating yourself, and you know that something's not right. And if you know something's not right, then go after this, because it'll be the best thing you've ever done in your life ever. Anyways, I mentioned the Sober by the Sea retreats, which are, of course, in the funky town of Southend in Essex. And I thought, what better guest to have on the podcast than a guy I met recently in Southend. He's doing some great work there. So enjoy the interview.
My guest is Michael from Sober Socials. Michael, how are you doing in sunny Southend?
I'm very well, a bit hot and flustered. It's actually very sunny here today. So,
do you know something? I'm convinced that Southend has got an actual microclimate all of its own, because a few days ago I was there and everybody was saying to me, oh my goodness, have you got flooding and thunderstorms and loads of rain? And it was beautiful.
Warmest, driest part of the UK. But it's Southend for a reason.
So, Michael, we met when you reached out because you'd seen that I was hosting my Sober by the Sea events. And so, yeah, I was really fascinated to find out about the work that you're doing with your Sober Socials, starting off with some events in Southend. But before we get into that, I'd just love to hear a bit about your story. So take me back and tell us a bit about what was going on for you some years back.
Well, I think it's probably a familiar story to a lot of people, probably more than who would admit it. Mm. I started drinking. When I was 18, I got a bar job and people would buy you a drink for the end of your shift. I'd have those. And I remember the first time I actually felt that it was affecting me in some way was I'd had a couple of days where I wasn't working and I was really itching to have a drink. Mm. And I think it started off as something that I do socially. I used to love going out the weekend with friends, but then it became more than just a social drink, and I'd start drinking during the week. And I suppose, I mean, I'm nearly 40 now, and about 10 years ago, I think, is when my relationship with alcohol first turned a bit sour. I'd lost my best friend, and I started drinking to sort of console myself. Mm. And that was the first time I started really drinking on my own, sort of not in company. And I'd start drinking on the sofa at home rather than binge drinking when I went out. And since then, it really mounted up to the point where actually I was drinking on my own most times and most days of the week. And I'd stopped going out because I started having accidents sometimes when I went out. I might hurt myself and not know how I'd done it, or I'd embarrass myself. And so I made what I thought was a very sensible choice at the time. The issue clearly wasn't the alcohol. It was the injuring myself or embarrassing myself. So instead of not drinking, I decided I would just stop going out and I would drink. I would drink at home. So right. Wouldn't have to worry about getting home or injuring myself because I was already at home and I'd save money. So that's in my mind at the time seemed like a very good idea. But what that resulted in was that I was drinking alone on my own, and it really affected my mental health. So I was getting depressed because I wasn't seeing people. And then on the occasions when I did go out, I'd invariably hurt myself or embarrass myself, and I decided I need to take action. I mean, you can get away with that sort of thing maybe when you're 18 and experimenting with drinking, but when you're sort of in your mid-30s, it's not so cute anymore, is it?
And it's interesting, just to interrupt there though for a minute, you know what you've just described is, I'm guessing, I mean, obviously this was a few years ago for you, but I'm guessing that exact experience is what a lot of people have been going through over COVID, because when we were in lockdown, I'm guessing that was the reality for an awful lot of people.
I think it was. And actually, I'd been making, a half-hearted attempt to stop drinking. Probably about 5 years ago, I first started, and I sought out local services that were available. I'd tried AA and then services provided by the council here in Southend. And I went along to some of the meetings every now and then, and but wasn't making a huge amount of success because I wasn't really applying myself. I wasn't doing my homework. And I always told myself, oh, well, relapse is part of recovery. I can start again next week. It's a bit like that diet that starts next week that ends up starting, well, never starting. So I'd always put it off and was very forgiving with myself every time I went out and lapsed. So it was actually just before lockdown that I made a really firm, concerted effort to stop drinking. I think lockdown starts on the 23rd of March last year, and I stopped drinking about 10 days before that. And I'm really glad I did at that point. I'm living on my own, and I was dreading lockdown because I do crave human contact. I decided to go and move in with my parents for lockdown. My dad's not very good at entertaining himself, and he'd have been driving my mum up the wall. So she was very grateful that I could distract him. And also I knew that I wouldn't drink in their house. I had that respect for my parents that I wouldn't do that to them. And all these meetings and things I'd been to that I thought had gone in one ear and come out the other, when I actually was beginning to try and stop and making that concerted effort, I found that I hadn't just gone out the other ear. It's stored in there, and I could hear things that had been said to me and little tools and things that you're taught. They'd actually stuck with me and they started making real sense. When I was going sober on my own, those services weren't available to me anymore. I couldn't go to any meetings online or physically, but I had remembered enough. And you've got the Academy of Google as well for reminding me of these things. And that's when I had my first real success at ditching the booze. I say giving up sometimes, but that sounds like a sacrifice.
I don't allow anyone to say giving up. It's always ditching the booze.
Because it hasn't been a sacrifice. I felt bereft in a way. It was a bit like grieving someone.
Alcohol had been probably been your longest relationship in a funny sort of way.
Alcohol had been a steadfast companion through thick and thin. You know, if I wanted to celebrate something, well, here's my bottle of booze to celebrate. If I was feeling down, well, here's my medicine that will block it all out. There was no occasion where alcohol didn't seem an appropriate companion. And I suppose it's been one of my longest relationships.
Exactly.
I do compare it to an abusive relationship, though.
Yeah.
There are so many parallels. I mean, unfortunately, I have been in an abusive relationship before, and that didn't really help with the drinking as well. That's another reason. You can always find a reason to drink if you want to drink, but that it did sort of block out some of the feelings and things that I didn't want to be going through. But in it, I find there are quite a few parallels. So first of all, my relationship with alcohol was wonderful. We had some great times together. You know, we'd go on holiday together. We'd celebrate and commiserate together. And as time went on, though, the alcohol became a bit more possessive. It didn't want me to have other friends. It didn't want me to go out. It left me sort of trying to hide dark eyes and bruises because I was embarrassed and didn't want to have to explain where they'd come from. And until the end, when I realized that all I had left in my life was alcohol, and I was actually scared of losing it. It was an abusive relationship, but I thought, if I lose alcohol now, I've got no one and nothing. And it's just, I was completely lacking that foresight of what I would gain by ditching that relationship. And I mean, at first it was really tough, I'm not gonna lie. It was, there's a lot of work that you have to put in because it's not just stopping drinking. People think, well, why can't you stop drinking? How hard can it, I remember my dad saying before, how hard can it be not to do something?
No, exactly, I know. And if you're someone who has an off switch and this has never been a thing for you, you don't understand, which is why people say to you, well, go on, you can just have one, you're not that bad, because it's not been their experience.
It's been an integral part of my life for 20 years. And so actually the stopping drinking in a way was the easy part. Okay, yeah. I mean I was physically dependent, so I had some withdrawal symptoms and sweats and shakes and things. I hadn't realized I'd become physically dependent, but I had. Right. And so it had to be done in a controlled way. But the harder part is actually, what do you do with your time now? Because thinking back, it becomes such an integral part of my life that I was spending hours and hours every week either drinking or recovering from drinking.
Yeah,
and
no, absolutely.
And now all of a sudden,
there's all this time.
I've got all this time, like Friday and Saturday nights. I didn't really want, lockdown happened, so I couldn't during parts of it. But then when we were allowed to go out, I didn't really want to go to the pub. I tried it for a while. I've been to the pub quite a few times, but after about a good 3 or 4 months of sobriety, and I would enjoy myself mainly the first part of the evening. But I found that after about three, everybody else had 3 or 4 pints, and I'm still on the usually flat and flavorless Diet Coke that cost £3 a go. I wasn't enjoying myself so much anymore because I wasn't at the same level as them.
Yeah.
So at the beginning of the evening, the conversation's really flowing. After 3 or 4 points, people are talking over each other.
Well, the truth is they start to get boring, in truth.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually a really boring person when I was drinking. I hadn't realised it. I thought that when I drank, I was the life and soul of the party, and that brought out the best version of myself until it all went tits up and I was sort of lying on the floor embarrassing myself. And then I started finding people who were merry, boring since I've given up drinking. And I thought, well, that's it. I'm now on my own every Friday and Saturday night. And you can go on their social media, Facebook and Instagram, and you can see that alcohol there, my greatest relationship that I've just split up with, is out with all my old friends.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, they're my friends, but you're still with them. And,
yeah.
And that's another comparison I'd make to a relationship is when you split up with someone you've been with long term, your friends all say that they're going to still be friends with both of you, but ultimately they pick their side. And unfortunately, alcohol's for a few of my friends is the more attractive option. I mean, I've got some really good friends who stay with and are happy to spend time with me just for my company. And that makes me realize that the true value of friendship, really. If your friendship is based on alcohol and getting drunk, and that's it. It's not really a particularly strong friendship that you need to invest a lot of time in. I'm more about friendships where you're going to help each other out through the good times and the bads, and you just enjoy each other's company. So
yeah,
taught me a lesson there.
Yeah, and we'll get on to your, you know, the sober socials that you founded in a moment, but just tell me a little bit about, you know, when the benefits started to kick in, how did your life change? I mean, you said, you know, you realized you had all this time. When did you start to realize, actually, do you know what, I'm actually maybe starting to like myself, or, you know, some of the amazing surprises that happen in the early months?
Well, I think it's been sort of a learning curve ever since day one. Days one to three for me were particularly difficult as I was getting the alcohol out of my system.
Of course,
I was having severe withdrawal symptoms on day three in particular, and it started getting easier from day four. And after about a week, I did feel like a different person, and the dark shadows under my eyes, which I'd had for a long time, started lightening up. After about a month, I wasn't craving alcohol then after a month. I think a lot of, for me, the craving of alcohol was the psychological.
Yeah, exactly.
It's habit. And I think is it 21, 28 days or whatever it takes to break a habit? So after a month, I'd broken that habit and I wasn't thinking and dwelling upon drink so much. And I thought I was going to dread the time I was spending with my parents over lockdown. And my dad's confessed to me he felt the same at first. He thought this is going to be absolutely disastrous. But we both really enjoyed each other's company. And I didn't want to leave. And my dad didn't want me to go at the end of it. We'd had such a nice time. And I'm really thankful for that time I spent with him. And so I started feeling like a human again after about a month. It could even have been less. And then you asked how long it was until I started liking.
Well, I just wonder what benefits started to come in for you that you remember sort of noticing, oh, wow, this is different.
Okay, for me, I waited a good 3 months or so until I went back into a pub. And actually, the first time I went back in, I went with people who were getting really quite leery, and it really made me uncomfortable. And I ended up just going home early. I just sort of made my excuses and left. I went back out again a couple of weeks later to work on a place that used to be my sort of my local, really. And I went up to the barman and ordered my Diet Coke, and he knew that I'd given up drinking. I apologized. I said, look, this is going to be bad for business, but I've stopped.
Yeah, you know, you might not stay afloat.
Yeah,
without
exactly.
Without my bar bill.
Yeah. I said, yeah, these tabs going to be a bit down now because I'm just on the Pepsi Max. And he said, well, actually, there's more profit line in the non-alcoholic drinks anyway, so we're happy with that. And then, I mean, I'd sort of known him to speak to for a good sort of 2 or 3 years. And he said to me, Michael, you're a completely different person without alcohol.
Really?
And I said, oh. Yeah, and I said, well, how so? He goes, well, first of all, you're not rude and obnoxious. Well, that was a shock to me because I didn't realise that I was particularly rude and obnoxious. And he said, and the second thing he said was, and also, you've been here for 10 minutes and haven't knocked your drink over yet. And that was like a real wake-up call to me. I hadn't realised, and I apologise for the language, I hadn't realised what an arsehole I could be when drinking. Apparently, I was just blunt and rude sometimes and then knocking things over. And he said to me, when he used to come in, I used to sigh and think, oh, God, what's going to happen now? I mean, nothing kicked off, but I'll just be rude and knocking over drinks. That was his impression of me. And now that I started going in there and continued going during August when we were allowed to eat out to help out and stuff, and it's sort of on friendly terms and really get on. And I was really grateful that I've had that opportunity to change someone's perception about me. I mean, yes, it was a bit of a shock to find that people could have such a low opinion of me. I don't know why I'm surprised, but I'm just grateful that I'm able to maybe change people's opinion for me. If they've only ever seen me out and being rude, then I can change that.
Well, it's true. I mean, people sometimes say, you know, about you know, people that they're with, their partners or whatever, you know, he's not the guy, he's not himself when he's drinking, or, you know, she isn't she isn't the real her when she's drinking. And actually, that's completely true. You really aren't yourself. You really aren't who you're meant to be. I really believe that. And you know, it's not just a drink. It changes everything. So I totally get that. And it's great that he had the balls to tell you that, really, isn't it? Because, it's a compliment. It's a compliment, really, because I really think that if more people were sober, the world would be a kinder place, because it definitely makes you more kind.
I mean, it has a different effect on everyone. I mean, some people, it makes them violent. So I'm grateful that it doesn't make me violent. It just makes me apparently rude, but also makes me just really sad. I suppose if it in any way it makes me violent, it makes me violent towards myself. It makes me the self-loathing was unreal. And there'd been a couple of occasions when it's a self-perpetuating cycle. I'd be down, I would drink. The drink is a depressant. Mm. And I was being in terrible bouts of depression.
And were you on medication for the depression, if you don't mind me asking?
I had been on medication as well, but I got to the point where I was given the medication, prescribed the medication, but I didn't stop drinking, so they wouldn't allow me to have the medication.
I'm glad to hear that, because that's one of the things that really upsets me, is the fact that people who, you know, perhaps they aren't clinically dependent, but they are absolutely drinking and they admit they're drinking, but they're still given antidepressants without really being asked the extent of their drink.
Now, my GP is very good and I'm thankful for that. And he's very understanding and kind. And he said, I won't prescribe you any more antidepressants until you've had a good 6 months of sobriety.
Good.
And so for a while, I decided I can self-medicate with the booze anyway until I'm ready to give it up. And but I'm on meds at the moment for depression, but I don't feel at all depressed. And I can't say I have done for a few months now. So when it comes to my next review date, I'm going to ask about, can I come off of them? Because I naturally feel happy.
Brilliant. It's so interesting to hear you say that. I really do think that so much more needs to be done around this link between, you know, alcohol and anxiety and depression. It's such a massive link, and there just needs to be so much more investigation done.
I think so. And the easy thing to do when somebody is depressed is to hand out medication. But that's not really a long-term strategy for a lot of people. And it doesn't necessarily address, I believe, the root cause. Mm. Some people, okay, I understand, might actually have an imbalance.
Absolutely, chemical imbalance, of course.
Yeah, deficiency of serotonin. And maybe that actually being antidepressants helps them, and it might be a lifelong thing, and if it
absolutely
helps address that, then that's perfectly fine. But I think there's also a real case to be made for using activities and social activities for improving your mental health. And that's something that I know some areas of the country more than others are actually looking into more. And there's this whole program of social prescribing is a real
thing. Prescribing definitely. Yeah, I remember hearing about that first with, you probably come across that doctor's, I think he's a professor actually now, Sam Etherington, or is he a sir or something? Anyway, he's an esteemed doctor. And he had a real massive campaign of social prescribing in, I think it was Southeast London. I saw a presentation that he gave where he showed the effect on the community. It was absolutely unbelievable. I mean, people who had no hope whatsoever, you know, people that were just really not getting any help that they needed, didn't feel they had any place in society, were sort of rocking up to this community space, gardening going on, there was an amazing cafe, they were learning all kinds of skills, lots of little businesses were coming out of it. I mean, talk about transformational, incredible, actually. Mm-hmm. I really hope that that's happening in lots of communities.
I think it's if it's not happening at the moment, I think it's something that's definitely going to see a surge in. And I'm fortunate enough, actually, over the last few days, I was contacted by somebody in the local NHS social prescribing team.
Brilliant.
They got in contact with me on LinkedIn and wanted to learn more about the events, because they thought it would be really appropriate. There's so many people they deal with, because actually just having social events for a lot of people would be of great benefit to them. But obviously the likes of the NHS aren't going to socially prescribe you to go to the pub.
Of course.
And for some people who've maybe got drink or addiction problems, that would be entirely inappropriate anyway. And for some people also, there's lots of people out there who haven't got any problems with drink, but they might have anxiety and they don't want to go, they wouldn't go into a pub because... Mm.
They don't want to be in an environment where people are drinking. Mm.
But they do want to socialise. Yes. I found that with lots of people who are in my group haven't ditched the booze. They've never, or they might never have drank. People are in there for all sorts of reasons. Mm. The only thing that unifies us all is that we want to drink in an environment, in a non-alcoholic environment.
You want to socialise, yeah, without alcohol. Socialize. Absolutely, yeah.
Have a proper connection with other people and form
absolutely.
A sensitive community.
I love that because, you know, at some point, you know, one day, won't it be great when it's just as normal to choose not to drink as it is seen to drink? So anyways, tell us about your community interest company, I think it's going to be, isn't it? And how the idea came about and what you're going to be doing in Southend.
So, it all started about a month ago. As I mentioned, I've found it difficult really to socialise after ditching the drink. There's lots of things I used to love about going to the pub. And that was, there would always be people there that I knew.
Mm.
So I already, even if I was going to go out on my own, I knew that when I turned up, I would have friends there. So I didn't have to worry about if I've got anyone to go with. I liked the sense of community. I liked the quiz nights and the activities, and I just liked letting my hair down and having a laugh. And I really wanted to continue that sort of thing, but without the alcohol. And I was thinking, I love going during the day when I can. I like going to there's a particular cafe in town where I always end up talking to people.
Mm.
And I thought, I wish this was open and available in the evening, and I could just come along. I could have some non-alcoholic drinks, slice a cake, we could have a few laughs, talk to each other, a bit of music, maybe a bit of entertainment on certain nights. Wouldn't it be great if we could do that? And I was looking around locally and there was nothing really. And for me, it was Friday and Saturday nights in particular. I wanted to go out. I didn't really have people who wanted to go out with me and not drink. And I didn't particularly want to surround myself with people who were drinking. So I thought, you know what? I don't have to have this as my social life for the rest of my life. Why don't I see if there's other people around like me who want to go out and not get drunk on a Friday and Saturday night and just have a good time? So I posted in a local Facebook group. It was for Southend, and it's got about 20,000 members. And I said, I explained my story that I'd stopped drinking and had found that since I'd stopped, my social life had died. And would anybody else be interested in coming along to some alcohol-free social nights? And I was thinking, well, let's see how that post goes. And within a couple of hours, 15 people had messaged me and said that they would be willing to help, to volunteer. If I wanted to sort out an event, they'd help me get it off the ground. And I thought, well, that's fantastic. And then I kept on getting more messages and a really good response. And then got to the point where I thought, I've got to form my own Facebook group now to keep in contact with it all. So I formed that, and then within a couple of days, I'd got 200 members. I'm now up to 300.
Amazing.
And it was all a bit of a whirlwind then, because what started off as just one post to see if I could get a few people who want to go for one evening. I've now ended up, luckily I've had a few weeks off of work, I've now ended up committing myself to weekly events on Saturday nights.
Brilliant.
And I've got somebody else who wants to do events on Friday nights as well at a different cafe, and those should be starting well by the time this goes out. Those should have started too. So, and now I'm looking at comedy nights. We've got a local comedy club who are looking at doing
That's brilliant. That's a great idea.
I've got a garden party. Whilst we've got nice weather, the mayor of Southend has kindly let us use their official residence, which is essentially a mansion with lovely gardens.
Lovely.
And let us use that for 4 hours for up to 60 people for a garden party. And I'm going to be inviting people to that very soon. It has sort of got out of control a bit, but I'm really pleased about that because
that's brilliant.
I have been rushing around like a blue ass proverbial. I don't know why I said proverbial instead of fly, because that wasn't the root word. um, And I've been sort of sitting up late some nights replying to emails and things, but it hasn't seemed like a chore because it feels like the most worthwhile thing I have done.
Absolutely.
And I'm digitally and so online, I'm meeting new people, and soon I'm going to be seeing them in the flesh. My first event sold out tickets. We only had 30 for the first event. That's the capacity. That sold out those within 2 days.
Mm-hmm. And the event that you're doing sort of towards the end of August, you've got kind of like a wrapper and stuff like that going on, have you?
Well, the lineup for the 21st of August is still to be confirmed.
Okay.
I've got the venue, and I've got two musicians potentially lined up. I'm going to pick which one. And then I would like to get another form of entertainment, because I'm trying to get a format going whereby I've got some live music every mm-hmm. week, and then but at the earlier part of the event, something else that's not music. So I've got the first event we'll have had comedy, but I'm looking to see what the other aspect is to that event before I put it on sale. But mm-hmm. I'm open to any sort of suggestion, anything that gets people interacting with each other.
Yeah. And I guess that eventually you can spiral this out so that if a bunch of people want to go bowling or whatever, it doesn't matter, does it?
Exactly. I've got a Facebook group, but it's not me who does all the talking and all the arranging. What I'm trying to encourage at the moment is that if you're in the group and say you fancied going bowling, as you've said, you could post in there, I'd really like to go bowling on Friday daytime, is anyone else free? And then other people, they can go and arrange it. Then hopefully these people will have met in the flesh from going to events as well, so it'll be its own social group. I've got somebody who's said they'd like to do like maybe just a walking group, so I'm now trying to set up the first sort of walk from the cafe where we have the events and an end point, and say, well, but then I would like somebody who does the likes walking to take those on going forward, so that actually they can decide each week where they're going to start and finish, bring a picnic, and I don't have to be involved in all the all the organizing, because I am going to be working full time, so I can't have to make sure I don't bite off more than I can chew.
It's a great initiative though, Michael, and I know you've got plans for the future, that there's no reason why you couldn't roll this out into other towns and cities, because actually everywhere needs these sober socials, doesn't it? This, however low key, it doesn't have to be massively expensive things. It can be, just these great opportunities for people in the community who, as you say, may not have really anything in common. It might be a very diverse group, but they've got that thing in common, and that's actually enough.
And I think that's what forms community, actually. Community is formed around a shared interest.
Yeah.
And if that shared interest is actually just socializing without alcohol, that's a great starting point, I think. That's proper socializing as well. And I've got a real mix of people in my group, so I'm quite excited to see how it all pans out, because I've got, I think my youngest is 18. I'm not accepting below 18, really. And then the oldest that I know, well, I don't know who the oldest is, but I know I've got somebody who's 70 going along. So
brilliant.
I'm seeing it really as family. I don't see why people of different ages shouldn't socially mix. In a family, everybody loves having their grandparents around and the grandkids. You've got all different ages and everybody gets on. And I think that's how it should be. I don't choose my friends by their age range. In fact, my best friend just celebrated her 60th birthday a couple of weeks ago, and she is a friend who stuck by me through thick and thin, and we always have a great time when we're together. So I'm just really excited to see how everyone gets on and what happens.
Cool. So tell us where the best place is for people to find out information then about events, if they're going to be in that area or if they want to connect with you.
I suppose the best starting point would be to visit my website, which is www.sobersocials.co.uk. And from there, you can find all our social media links as well. So if you go to that website and then you're on Instagram, Twitter or Facebook, then you can find our social links as well. But I'm listing the events there, and our Facebook group, though, we have a Facebook page and a group. The Facebook group is probably where the most activity happens, and that's where it's actually fun, because people talk to each other and they tell you what they've been up to, and that's where we're building an online community. And I think that's one of the things I do like about social media. Social media gets a lot of flack, and sometimes I hate it as much as everybody else. But social media can be a wonderful tool if that online engagement can be translated into face-to-face engagement.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time we have all these online communities that never see each other, but I want to turn this online community into a community where people actually know each other and they have good times and good memories together and they help each other out.
Absolutely. I love that. I mean, we sometimes say, don't we, well, you know, how many Facebook friends have you got? And it might be however many hundred, but actually the reality is how many of them would lend you a fiver? You know, how many are actually going to be friends? And the reality is some of them will, if you can get to meet, you know, connect further with them, as it were, and get to meet them. So I love what you're doing, and it's really fantastic. And, you know, I've come to love Southend. You know, it just, for me, it just started off with an addiction to the sea and needing to get to the place that's closest to where I live. You know, I love it, and I really look forward to us doing something together. I'd love to do something for you. You know, we'll do something around health and well-being at some point. So I really look forward to that. Brilliant. Thank you, Mike. I wish you all the best with it. It's very exciting. And we'll put all the links to all the stuff that you're doing in the show notes. Thanks. That's really great. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much for your time. I've enjoyed speaking to you.
So check out sobersocials.co.uk, and obviously, as we've already mentioned, if you want that online support in a small group, of course you can check out what we do in the Sober Club. Come to thesoberclub.com. You'll find everything there, all the blog posts and competitions and events. That's where you'll find the information about my Sober by the Sea retreats, which are just one day retreats in Southend. Maybe you could time it with something that Michael's doing. Come on our retreat, and then in the evening, go along to one of Michael's events, which would be really cool. What else did I want to tell you? We've got some really good competitions at the moment, so I really hope you'll check out some of those to win some great drinks. I'm pretty sure we have some Bemuse to give away. I talked about Bemuse last week, which is really unique alcohol-free mead. Very unusual. We've got some, I think we've still got the competition open to win the Jomo Club box as well, which is a selection of different drinks, which they've sort of put together, a kind of boutique-y style box. So everything you need to craft some lovely cocktails. So there's a whole bunch of competitions. So make sure you enter those. Got to be in it to win it. And don't forget as well my Platinum Awards that run every year. I've told you about them a lot, I think. But again, if you're interested in health and well-being products, then you can vote for your favourite brand and be entered into our prize draw there. And put the date in your diary. I think it's the 13th of September. We're going to be hosting a pop-up non-toxic shop at Hello Love, which is a fabulous, fabulous charity and studio in Bloomsbury in London, where you get a chance to have a look at some of the entries, you know, a chance to buy some of the cool natural and organic products that we're going to have on sale there, as well as all the other funky stuff that they have for that charity, for Hello Love. Please don't forget to share the podcast if you enjoyed it, and you know, rate and review and all of that stuff. Obviously it would be wonderful if you wanted to write a review for us, or send me a testimonial, and make sure you stay in touch. If you're doing this thing, then don't do it alone. Absolutely don't do it alone. Reach out, find a community. You know, that's what Michael did. You know, he wanted to get social, so he got it going. You know, he couldn't find anything, so he started it. And there's something really magical about just connecting with like-minded people. It makes such a difference. It literally makes all the difference in the world. So always reach out, tell someone, share what's going on for you, and get yourself inspired. It's so worth it. I think I've probably said that a ton of times. The other thing that happened in our group this week was we asked people to describe how they feel in three words. And I wish I'd got them all in front of me. There was such a lovely, lovely selection of words. But of course, mine was the title of my book, which is Happy, Healthy, Sober. And you know what? That's what I want for you all. I really do. I'll see you same time next week. You know where to find me on all the usual social medias, at at Janie Lee Grace. On Facebook, it's at Janie Lee Grace Laughs. Actually, I think I've got Happy Healthy Sober on Facebook, haven't I? Anyways, I look forward to connecting with you soon. Don't forget, by the way, if you've got any suggestions for great podcast guests for me, particularly if you can connect me as well, that'd be amazing. Let me know. I'm really lucky that I get fantastic guests on this podcast, and it makes such a massive difference, and I'm incredibly grateful. Last week we charted in the Apple Mental Health Chart, by the way, which is really nice. The podcast quite often pops up in there, and I'm sure it's because, you know, I've got some fantastic people willing to give up their time, willing to share their story, and of course for me, you know, absolute labour of love, right? Have a great week. See you soon. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.